This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
The Vietnam War, it's over.
Your job's just begun.
A new HBO original limited series.
Welcome to the world of spycraft. Strap in.
From executive producers Park Chan-wook and Robert Downey Jr.
What are you concealing?
Based on the Pulitzer Prize-winning novel by Viet Thanh Nguyen.
What if I told you that I was a communist spy?
How did you become this?
The Sympathizer, streaming April 14th on Max. Subscription required.
Everyone, this is David. Welcome back behind the velvet rope. Let's just get right into it today because we are joined by New York Times bestselling author, Broadway star, entrepreneur, star dancer, one of Barbara Walters' 10 most fascinating people in the world, a TV legend, a gay icon, and none the least to say, an Emmy winner. I can't believe I'm saying this. What is my life? The one and only Miss Susan Lucci.
Hi, David.
How are you, Susan? Welcome.
Thank you so much. I'm feeling just great. Thank you. How about you?
I am doing well today. Where are you? You're in Long Island, right?
I'm in Long Island. I'm at home. Mm-hmm.
So how is your day going so far today?
It's going great. Actually, they were saying a big storm was coming. There was a little thunder and then it was over.
There was a storm in New York for like a minute in New York City, and then it was over as
right?
well. Well, I have to say, so as I sat down to prepare for this, I look back and I see January 16th, 1970, the beginning of Erica Kane. Now, when I say that, and when you think back to you, does that seem like yesterday, or does that seem like, who is that girl and when was that?
You know, it doesn't seem like yesterday, but probably if you told me it was 10 years ago, I would believe that. I mean, it has flown. Time has gone by so fast.
I mean, I was like, oh my God. Did you ever think when you went for that role that you would have a 41-year starring role on one show forever, you know, 41 years?
Never. In fact, I had to be persuaded by my agent at the time to sign that first contract, which was for 4 years.
Wow.
Because 4 years at that time I had, you know, I just gotten out of college. So 4 years of high school, 4 years of college, that was like a whole lifetime. You know, I didn't know if I could do that, sign up some for anything for 4 more years.
When we're young, didn't 4 years sound like, wait a second, that's just way too much commitment for anything.
Exactly. Yes.
Was it always acting for you growing up? Like, did you ever think you wanted to do anything else?
I always wanted to be an actress since I can remember, probably before I ever even heard the word actress. I mean, it was just what I did. I made up stories and acted all the parts. And my mother was really nice. She let me go in her top drawer of her dresser and get out all her scarves. And my uncle had traveled to Asia, and my mother didn't smoke, but she had this long cigarette holder. And she had long silk gloves. And at that time, there were these wire things with jewels on them. And women used to wear their chignons like Grace Kelly. And my mother would pull her hair back, and that's what would hold her chignon. But I could make it a crown. I could make it really anything.
Wow. So it really was Always acting.
Always. And I would put on Broadway cast albums that my parents had. And I would sing and dance all over the house. And as long as I didn't have my shoes on, my mother would let me jump all over the furniture and pretend I was, you know, dancing.
I love it. Do you have, like, what are some of your early memories of being on the set of All My Children, like right in the beginning? You know, you were green. It was your first, you know, big job. Like, what do you remember from that time?
Well, I remember being really, really feeling like I was under the gun. I was very nervous. I knew I had had really good teachers and, you know, I was doing everything that they were had taught me to do. They were wonderful. But we were on the, there were four of us who were playing the high school kids, which was unusual for four kids to be playing, have a major role.
Yeah.
Soap opera. Anyway, we were on probation. The four of us were on probation for the first five episodes. So, you know, the network could change their mind and we knew it. So I, for one, was very scared.
Do you you know, from all those times that, you know, all those years, do you have like a high that sticks out of like all of Erica's storylines? Is there one or two that are just like, those are your favorites?
Oh, you know, Erica was a really busy character. I was a really lucky actress. So on a really light note, the other thing that Agnes was so groundbreaking, Agnes Nixon, who created All My Children, and Erica Kane. But she, I mean, as far as I know, before Agnes, there was no real glamour either on daytime television. It was no humor. There was no glamour. It was just a lot of drama, wonderful drama. But she also brought in glamour and humor. But she had the first really light storyline that I loved was a very glamorous one where Erica was a model. And I remember that we also went out on location and that was unheard of. We shot all over New York City. It was December, it was freezing. I was in little tiny dresses and lying on marble, something with a fountain outside of Lincoln Center and up on top of the fountain in front of the Plaza Hotel. And I was in a little chiffon dress. And the men below me, I could see them on Fifth Avenue. They were selling chestnuts. They had on parkas. It was some of my best acting because I had to be all, you know, happy and smiling like nothing was there in terms of the cold weather. But it was so much fun coming down the steps, the grand staircase at the Metropolitan Museum of Art. I mean, I had some wonderful, really wonderful experiences. And also the hair and makeup was very high fashion. And that was very fun. It was fun. You know, this was a fantasy come true. This was exciting to do. And then there were of course, the more serious storylines, which, you know, as an actress, I was very grateful to have two. Two of them involved Bianca at different ages. The one actually that won the Emmy for was the time where the 11-year-old Bianca was saying that she had anorexia and we did an intervention. I would say the storyline that I'm most proud of is when the 16-year-old Bianca came out to Erica. And Agnes and her writers wrote this storyline in real time. So it was a 2-year journey. And it was so well done, so well cast. I love Eden Riegel who played Bianca and it had impact on the world.
It did. Like, I mean, as a gay man and a member of the gay community and like, you know, I have a ton of lesbian friends. Like that's the first thing they say when I told them I was speaking to you. They're like, you have to talk about Bianca. And I mean, that storyline just still stands out to people.
Thank you.
I mean, you know, you also had some food fights and you wrestled a bear and you buried some people in the backyard. I mean, there were those stories too, of course.
which were wonderful and so much fun. I mean, when they told me I was going to fight a grizzly bear and win, I thought, I would try anything in rehearsal. I always do. And at the time, I just remember saying to Jackie Babin, who was our producer at the time, we were way up north in Canada, about 2.5 hours north of Toronto, in a place called Peterborough, I think it was. And it was on the Great Lakes. And anyway, it was a very hot, humid July day. And there was the bear and his trainer. And I said to Jackie, so I'm going to fight this grizzly bear and win. And she said, yeah, just try it. And I said, don't you think we've gone too far this time? She said, no, just try it. So I said, of course, okay, I'll try it. Anyway, the bear was being kept cool in a stream. And then the trainer got the bear out and he was groaning. He did not want to work. And I'm thinking, oh, great. How am I going to win this? And anyway, I tried it. That was it. And we did the scene and it turned out to be a classic, I think, in the fans' delight level. They really loved it.
It's just like, what's happening? Erica, of course she's going to win against a bear. Like that makes total sense, right? I mean, what was there anything, you know, like I know you also dealt with, like you guys had the first legal abortion on TV, which was another like really serious storyline. What about, was there anything that jumped the shark or was it the bear where you're just like, I think we went too far here, guys. Like I need to speak to someone.
Yeah. There was a time where I think when Phil came back from Vietnam and he wanted Erica to be barefoot and pregnant all the time. And there were actually scenes where Erica was ripping out ads from the newspaper about houseplants. And I remember thinking, this just not, and I would say, I said, you know, I'll do this, but this does not seem like Erica at all. And in fact, she didn't stay in that chained in place for very long. She went up going to New York and resuming her modeling career and burst into song in Brandon Kingsley's office, you know, New York, that's where she belonged.
Between that and like wrestling the bear, that's where it's just like, this is amazing. Well, like you said, like Agnes Nixon was so groundbreaking. I mean, how great was it to work with her all those years?
Oh, it was amazing to work with her all these years. And even from the beginning, I mean, when I saw my audition script, it was an 8-page scene, knockdown, drag out fight between Erica and her long suffering, but very sensible mother, Mona, played by, you know, Fra Heflin, who I just adored. And, Erica was 15 at the time and she was getting ready for her math tutor to come over, who was Phil Brent, who was very handsome. Erica was into collecting boyfriends, and especially if he was somebody else's. And Phil and Tara was a very beloved couple. So Erica wanted to break them up. And to get ready for this math tutor, Phil Brent, Erica was, you know, putting on her makeup, her mascara in her mirror. And her mother kept saying, but Erica, it's math. Don't you think you should be studying math? And Erica was, as many 15-year-old girls are with their mothers, and I speak from experience,
right?
You know, not always in agreement. And my own mother and I would watch these scenes, you know, when they aired, and we would laugh because, and I guess a lot of people identified with all of those stages of relationships. And at the same time, even in the audition script, there was history, there was, as I said, the knockdown drag out, but you could always tell there was love between that mother and daughter. It's great.
It was it was one of the great relationships of the show. Well, speaking of relationships and math tutors and having crushes on boys, I mean, Erica certainly said I do plenty of times.
Yes.
I mean, to me.
She meant it every time. She meant it when she said it. she was hopeful.
That's literally what I was going to ask you, because to me, she meant it every time, right? I mean, that's like, she believed it and she meant it every single time.
Yes. She did.
So, I mean, Erica might be one of our most hopeless romantics.
Oh, yes, definitely. And it's very funny because she also just had a great deal of spirit in her that was driving her. And she was she wasn't after power, so to speak. She was much more after love, but she turned out to be really good at running businesses and being an entrepreneur. And but it was not her focus, but she had a lot of spirit and she could do all of that. She was actually much more successful in her business ventures than she was in her personal life.
Yes, she was. Do you have a favorite husband of Erica's?
You know, that's a really, really hard question to answer because, you know, I was a really lucky actress to play all these scenes with those men. The Dimitri relationship was very romantic. Very romantic. We shot some of the most romantic scenes, and we shot in Budapest in Hungary in a palace, and waltz in this palace, and all of that and that experience in real time, because it was before the wall came down, before it was, the communists had just left Budapest. Wow. So what was going on really around us was not romantic, but quite historical and quite amazing to be there. Also, Travis was very romantic. One day, Jorn Winter was our producer, and we started early in the morning at a racetrack in Bridgehampton. There used to be a racetrack there. And actually, Danny Sullivan, who was the, you know, iconic Indy 500 race car driver winner, came out to show me how to actually look like I knew what I was doing, because Erica was supposed to win this race, this amazing race car. And he showed me how to get in and out easily, how to put on all the gear. And then that same night, we flew to South Carolina, and at 1 o'clock in the morning, or maybe it was two, Travis and I were dancing in a garden, in a plantation. There had to be 1,000 votive candles all over the lawn. Also very romantic. So yes, Erica was in love with love.
She had some good ones.
She did.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
The first taste of rare bourbon you finally got your hands on. That's nice. At Caskers.com, we make this experience easy. Caskers is a one-stop spirit curator with an impressive selection of exclusive, sought-after, rare, and household names in the realm of premium spirits and champagne. Discover the top flavors of the year now by going to Caskers.com and using code WELCOME10 for $10 off your first purchase. Get $10 off your first purchase with code WELCOME10 at Caskers.com.
What about, so we talk about 41 year apart, it's amazing. Then there's this cultural phenomenon of you and the Emmy. We talked about that, you know. What was that like for you as you were going through it? I mean, did any part of you say, I don't need to win? Like, this has now become bigger than winning the Emmy itself. I mean, it was such a big thing. Or were you just like, come on, guys, I want to win?
You know, there was so much work at hand every day during all those years, from year to year. And I can't speak for every show, but our show didn't talk about it. It's just that we did all these scenes, and the company of actors was amazing, and all my children, and we would, you know, we really wanted the scenes to work. That's what we were doing. But on the other hand, when it came time for the nominations to come out, and I often didn't know when they were coming out, and that was good, because then you get all very breathless, but you have to go do your work, you know? So right. And when I would hear I was nominated, I was thrilled. And then came the process of choosing what to submit. And the submission rules were a little different from year to year, or maybe every couple of years. How many scenes? One scene, how many scenes? Three shows, one show, so on. So it was always a challenge. On the other hand, I was so thrilled to be included. And every year, I mean, 19 is a lot of years.
Yes.
But I was very thrilled every year. I do know that after the ninth year, for some reason, I sort of would go numb at the Emmys when they would say who won. I didn't ever really hear it. I would be whipped into a frenzy. I would go there with the press and with the fans, and was thrilled that they cared, you know, that they were rooting for me. And I would get very excited and very hopeful. But 19 years is a lot of years. I will say it's much better to win, but you can't win if you're not nominated. So it was all good.
I mean, I assume 19, you know, but then, you know, you get this standing ovation. You are up there. You got emotional, as you should. I mean, how does that feel, just to see the reception from like your peers and like.
Oh, I will never forget that. I'll tell you, I have told this story before, but I will tell you when we, it was in the garden that year. Usually we were in Radio City, but Radio City was closed for renovation. So the Emmys were in Madison Square Garden. And when I sat down, I was seated in the front row. My husband and I came in and we were seated. And sitting to my left was Rosie O'Donnell. And she leaned over when I sat down and she said, "Susan, when you go up on stage tonight, why don't you hand me your evening bag? Because otherwise they'll say your name, you'll get all excited, you'll step on your evening bag and that won't be good on TV." So I said, "Thank you, Rosie. That's so nice of you, kind of you. But, you know, history has pretty much taught me that I'm not going up on that stage right tonight." But I'm a hopeful person, but, you know, I didn't really think so. Anyway, when it came time and Shamar Moore was opening the envelope, and he was so charming. He opened the envelope. As I said, we were in Madison Square Garden that night. So he opened the envelope and he screamed out, "The streak is over." And I thought he was announcing some playoff scores. And I thought, isn't that nice? He's keeping everybody in the audience up to date with, you know, because basketball, hockey, it all keeps on going in May. Anyway, when he said, the winning diva is, and he said my name, I didn't hear my name. As I told you, I had gone numb after the ninth time. But the only way I knew I won is that Rosie O'Donnell leaned over and took my evening bag. My husband lifted me up by my elbow. And I whispered in his ear, if anybody saw the broadcast, they saw me do that. And I asked him, "Are you sure?" Because really, because I never would hear it, I kept thinking, oh my goodness, sometime I'm just gonna go up. And that will be terrible. He said, "Yes, it's you." And I went up on stage. And as I was going up, I thought, my knees, I can feel everything's, my knees are buckling. I don't know how I'm going to stand, how I'm going to turn around, how I'm going to speak. The night before, I had thought to myself, everybody's saying, this is my year, this is my year. But it wasn't the first time. And I thought, well, if it is my year, I would have so many people to thank, and I don't want to forget anybody or anything. I'm so grateful. And so I allowed myself to kind of go through, you know, who I would want to thank. And when I got up there and turned around and saw the audience, as you said, my peers, the people who worked just as hard as we did at All My Children and I did, on their feet applauding for me, and some people with tears, and Oprah Winfrey in the wings jumping up and down applauding. And I just hoped I could speak. And so I started to thank the people, and I had so many to thank. And honestly, I'm so grateful to Kelly Ripa, who was center in my vision in that audience. And she was saying, because they started to play the music,
right,
I had so many, 19 years, I had a lot of people to thank. And I wanted to thank my children, and I wanted to thank my husband. And Kelly was saying, "Let her speak, let her talk." And so they let me go on and thank my children and my husband.
I remember it, but I rewatched the video yesterday too. And I was getting emotional. I was like, this is just such a great moment. So did you really think you were just never going to win? I mean, you know, 19 years is a long time, or it just, like you said, it was about the work and it wasn't like at the forefront of your mind, but it's nice to win, right? Did you really just think it would never happen for you?
You know, I would never say never. And I am an optimistic person. You know, I'm a hopeful person, and I loved the character, and I was getting so much support from everyone around me all the time that I thought, well, maybe, but as I said to Rosie, history's taught me, you know, so I wasn't sure.
You just weren't sure. Mm-hmm. Is there anything, you know, like, I've spoken to so many actresses that have played parts for like so long. Was there any part of you, like, as you were playing Erica, and I know you did other things like throughout that and after, certainly, which we're going to get into, was there any part of you that worried, like, okay, I'm getting typecast, there's other things I want to do? I mean, All My Children, that part, I mean, it was all encompassing. It was great. And there's no shade. I'm just saying, like, as an actress, were you like, oh, I wish I could just do that for like 2 months and come back? And you did some of that, and we'll talk about it. But like, was there more of that we don't know about?
I was aware that I was being typecast. But on the other hand, I loved playing her so much. And I have to say, not a bad type, you know? So I was fine, but I knew that I had to do something else. I didn't think I could call myself truly an actress if I only played one part, even though there was so much range within Erica. You know, I was given this enormous gift of a character to play, but I knew I had to play other roles in order to be okay with calling myself an actress.
That makes sense. What about, you know, if you talk to most people and you say, like, who is the most famous character in daytime TV history, who is the most, like, well-known actress? It's Erica Kane and Susan Lucci. There's lots of others, but that is what people will say. I guarantee you, Susan, 99.9 out of 100 people would say that. So how does that feel? I mean, is that a lot of pressure, like, over the years to be number one on the call sheet? I mean, I know it was an ensemble show and everybody was great. Like, is there that pressure? And just, does that feel great that it's just such an iconic role and you've turned into such an iconic actress?
Thank you. I knew this character, this role was as good as it gets. And I had no desire to think otherwise. I mean, I loved what I did. And it's funny. I mean, every time my contract would come up, I would honestly take a good hard look at, was I really happy? 25 years in, I remember one day, because my inside voice, I'd go into the studio, I'd be laughing, I'd be happy, I'd be smiling, I'd be singing inside. And I was thinking, something wrong with me? I've been here for such a long time. And right. I love what I'm doing. Loved everybody I was working with. Not to sound like a Pollyanna and not to sound like somebody who's just, you know, stupid. I did look at it and I was really happy. It also really, staying in New York was something I wanted to do. And I wanted my children to have continuity in their growing up, which I was able to give them, which made me very happy. You know, those things all added up. Also, I grew up in New York. I mean, on Long Island, but in New York. And so Broadway was it for me. And so to work with a lot of actors who were on Broadway and as day players or small arcs or large arcs, but who, you know, that's who they were. I knew I was working with the best actors in the world.
Right. What about, you know, the end of All My Children? You know, 41 years, were you... I shocked when you heard about this. How does that, I mean, that must feel like that's a hard thing after that many years.
I was shocked. I think we all were shocked. There have been rumors about maybe our moving. We moved to LA for the last 2 years and we were told that if we made that move, we would save the show.
Right.
And we believed that. And also I had, the book that you referenced in that nice introduction you gave me had just come out, and I was on the book tour and I was all over the country, and everywhere I went, everywhere, the fans were amazing, passionate, amazing, huge crowds. It was wonderful. So I could go back to the All My Children studio and tell our cast and crew what I had just seen, that there was so much love for our show. The numbers had not diminished at all. So anyhow, when it happened, we were all pretty shocked. Agnes actually called me around 4 o'clock in the morning, and she gave me a heads up on it. She had just been given a heads up on it. And wow. So when I went to the studio that morning, we were in LA at that time. When I went to the studio that morning, I was called shortly after I arrived to go down to the executive producer's office. And then I was told, you know, what was going on by the head of ABC Daytime at the time, Brian Franz, told me, and Julie Crothers was sitting there, just the three of us in the room. He told me that they were going to, All My Children was no longer going to be on the air, and One Life to Live was no longer going to be on the air, that he was doing cooking shows. At least that's what was going to replace us. And it would be much less expensive to produce, 40% less to produce. So that's wow. Why he was making his decision. So I was really shocked. I was very upset for everyone. I mean, this was really an ensemble, meaning the crew as well. And and the writers and the executives, the production staff, everybody. And so I felt bad on so many levels. Also, it seemed so unnecessary and so uncalled for, given the what I had just been experiencing all around the country. In fact, those fans crashed the ABC computer system, trying to voice their displeasure, to say the least, at having all my children canceled. And I know that for a fact because Agnes told me the number to call. And so I did. And the message said, to voice your upset at having all my children canceled, press 1. For all other ABC business, press blah, 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 blah. So it was huge.
Wow.
But we were all very, very shocked. It was really a mourning period. We were very angry too, very angry. And then you go into, you know, there's shock and disbelief and denial and just wanting to keep on putting a good show on, you know?
Yeah, especially when there was so much love from the fans as you were traveling around.
Yes.
Once you get over like the shock and the loss and that period, then do you turn or did you turn to like, now, I mean, you are Susan Lucci, like, do you turn to like, I'm worried, like I need a job. I still want to work. I've got more in me. Or, you know, I mean, it worked out. You got Devious Maids pretty quickly, but did you go through that? Like, oh my God, what am I going to do? Or you're like, hey guys, it's 41 years. You know what? I could hang out for a few years and recover. And like, that's a long time to work nonstop.
That actually, it never occurred to me that it was a long time to work nonstop until COVID, until we had this pause, until we went into lockdown. I didn't know what a pause was until then. And now I look back and I think, oh, wow. I mean, we really were on roller skates. You know, I mean, Jill Larson, who played Opal, and I would cross, I mean, everybody is in hair and makeup and running around costume fittings, and they're calling our names on the loudspeaker and to go to the set. And I would see Jill in the distance and she would say, hi, I love you. We can't make eye contact. We'd love to talk, but we have to go. You know, there was no time. And that was too much, you know? And I remember saying to my agent at one point, wow, you know, I'd love to just find a balance. And she said to me, oh, you want a balance too? Oh. So I heard recently, actually the wonderful woman CEO of PepsiCo say that it's impossible as a working mother, wife, to find balance, but it is a constant juggling act, and that it is.
This podcast is sponsored by BetterHelp Online Therapy. Check out betterhelp.com/velvetrope. You may not be feeling down and out and depressed or like you're at a total loss, but if your stress level is high, your temper is shorter than usual, or even if you're starting to feel strain in any of your relationships, you could probably use the chance to unload. Talk to someone who's completely unbiased and who's not going to judge you or take sides. If there's stuff you can't tell your friends or family, this is the place to do it. BetterHelp is customized online therapy that offers video, phone, and even live chat sessions with your therapist. So you don't have to see anyone on camera if you don't want to. It's much more affordable than in-person therapy, and you can start communicating with your therapist in under 48 hours. Unload the stressors and get some unbiased feedback. You'd be pretty surprised at what you might gain for it. This podcast is sponsored by BetterHelp, and Behind the Velvet Rope listeners get 10% off their first month at betterhelp.com/velvetrope. That's BETTERHELP.com/velvetrope. BetterHelp.com/velvetrope.
But apart from that, in terms of wanting to continue as an actress, I was thrilled to meet with Mark Cherry. I was thrilled that he said, well, I didn't know. The fans, again, were all over the internet saying they wanted me to go on Desperate Housewives. And we met. And he said, I know. He said, I know they do. But he said, it is, you don't know this, but it's the last season. It's already written and it's already shot. But he said, I have a new show coming up. And so he thought of me for that.
What was that like when you first read the part for Geneviève Delator?
Thank you for remembering that name. I thought to myself, if I'm going to follow Erica Kane, Geneviève Delator is a pretty good name at least. And I didn't, I went out to read for Mark because that's part of, I went out to LA to read for Mark and the producer. And that's part of his process, which I get. You know, it's one thing to like someone's work and it's another thing to know if you can work together and how that will be. And so I was in their offices and I didn't know how he was going to pronounce it. I mean, I was just reading. Nobody told me it was Geneviève. I thought, is it Genevieve? What, how is that going to be? And I walked into his office. And before we did the scene, he and the stage manager and I did the scene. He said, well, Geneviève, blah, blah, and Geneviève. I said, oh, Mark, you have just told me so much about this character just by the way you pronounce her name. It was a great experience. I loved doing it. And I thought, I love this so much that even if I don't get the part at the end of the day, I loved doing this. It was so much fun.
Another great part, right? Geneviève was phenomenal. I mean, the whole show, again, great cast, total ensemble, but Geneviève was just a fan favorite right from the beginning.
Oh, thank you. I'm so happy to, you know, that surprised me about Erica too, because Erica was the naughty girl in town and I liked her. I thought I wanted to play her, but I didn't know if anybody else would. I was only supposed to be on it every other Tuesday in the beginning, you know, just to stir the pot. But the fans embraced her and yes, they embraced Geneviève, which was great.
If Geneviève and Erica got an, like a tassel of some sort, it's not physical, just like a power of wits, who would win? Who's better at manipulating?
Well, first of all, it might've been physical, but Erica would have won. I think she was the one who had the street smarts too. Geneviève Moore was living in a Beverly Hills bubble behind the gates, and Zoila was the realist, and Geneviève was just, you know, in her own world.
And, you know, there's all this talk today with all these shows about like diversity and inclusion. And like so many shows have come so far. You look at like Shonda Rhimes and Ryan Murphy, but, you know, I mean, it wasn't 20 years ago, but Devious Maids, I put in the category of a show that was technically ahead of its time. That
Yes. I agree with you. And in the case of at least Geneviève and Zoila, Zoila was the one with all the, intelligence about how you live your life. You know, it was Geneviève who was out there.
Zoila really ran that house, didn't she?
Oh, she sure did. She sure did. But I have to say, one of my favorite scenes I ever got to play was the opening scene of Geneviève under the bed in her mansion, crying because she felt like she was losing her life and her son and daughter. Well, not her daughter, but Zoila's daughter, and Zoila had to talk her off a ledge.
That was a classic scene. Mm-hmm. Another highlight for me of your career, you talk about things you did during All My Children, was the last season of Dallas.
Oh.
Dallas was a great show.
A great show. And again, one the fans adored. It was what everyone talked about around the water cooler, if you will, you know? And, they called and asked if I would like to do the last bit of Dallas. And we have to shoot in Paris. Are you want to do that? And so, you know, let me think about this.
Right.
I was like, yes, I want to do that. So we went to Paris and it was August, actually. And it was a wonderful experience in many, many ways. Patrick Duffy is who I worked with mostly, and he was a doll. His family was there. He had teenage boys. Our children were younger, and so they weren't with us, but my husband was with me. And I had some wonderful experiences, of course, doing the show, but it was also Fashion Week in Paris. And so Patrick and I got to go to a couple of shows, and I hadn't been to anything like that before. It was spectacular. And also, I got to go to Chanel in Paris. There's more than one, but I went to the one I had been told about. And for the first time, I bought something from Chanel there. But while I was there by myself, my husband was playing golf, and it was a really hot, hot day, but it was August. And so I saw something I liked very much. And, but I had never bought anything from Chanel before. So I asked the saleswoman if she could hold it until my husband met me in about an hour. And I wanted him to see it too and see what he thought. And she said, yes, I can do that. And she was holding the things up. And as she moved away to go put them on the side, she revealed that Sophia Loren was sitting in the chair at the cash register, cashier, saleswoman, whatever, sitting in a chair. As I said, it was so hot. Sophia Loren is someone I admired my whole life and still do. In any case, she was sitting there on this hot summer day. I can tell you, I still remember, she was more beautiful in person. She had on a sky blue silk dress with a low neckline, like square, and elbow length sleeves. And she was gorgeous. And I was so thrilled, because when you see someone you've idolized so much, I was not a bit disappointed. In fact, as I said, she was more beautiful. And we were the only people in the shop because it was August in Paris. Everyone was gone. In any case, I didn't want to interrupt her private time. But I could feel my face. I was smiling. Of course, I adored her. And she must have felt someone smiling. And she looked up and she smiled. And then I left because I said I didn't want to speak. I probably couldn't have spoken. I was so thrilled to see her.
Do you ever regret not saying something to her?
You know, I had a chance a couple of years later to be in her company. Several years later, I was at the White House, actually, for a state dinner for the president of Italy. And I was in the, I think the East Room. And Bill Clinton was the president at the time. And when my husband and I arrived, we were given envelopes which tables we were at. We were not put at the same table. My husband was at table one. I was at table 10. And my husband looked at the envelopes and he said, "Oh, honey, I'm sorry. There must be some mistake. And that I'm at table one and you're at table 10. And as we went into the room, he took me to my seat at table 10, which turned out to be the president's table right there. Center. And he was at table one, as he will tell you, way off in the boonies by the kitchen door.
Right.
Which, you know, I said, "Oh, honey, now I'm sorry." Anyway, so I was seated at the president's table. At the table next to me with Hillary Clinton, who was then the first lady, was Sophia Loren. And I hadn't seen her since I saw her for the first time in Paris. This was the second and the only other time I saw her. She had on a red gown. She had just flown in. She looked stunning as always. And then we were introduced, and then I could say how much I admired her.
Did you say, "You know, we've met before," kind of one day in Paris in Chanel?
No, I don't think I think there were other people who were taking her attention. I was just one of the throngs, you know, saying, "Aren't you wonderful? I love you."
What about the other way around? Like when people come up to you, I mean, like, have you ever had like a strange fan interaction? And like, you know, does that get overwhelming at times? I would imagine, you know, there's so many, you have so many fans. Erica has so many fans. And do people confuse the two also? Like, do people come up to you not realizing that you're Susan Lucci and you've done so many other things, Broadway, written books, like you're not Erica Kane?
You know, first of all, I've been very lucky. I can, you know, count on one hand with fingers left over the odd experiences I've had. People are mostly very enthusiastic and really warm and very informed. Wow, people have such a good memory. And their passion is the same as that we were still on the air, which helped me get through that whole mourning period. I knew I didn't have to leave her behind, that she was still with us. Much like you would mourn, you know, a loved one. You realize, right, they're still with you. They'll always be with you. And that was a help. And the fans have helped me through that. No, that's been a great thing.
What about Dancing with the Stars? Where does that fall on the realm of difficult things you have done in your career?
Oh my goodness. Oh, this was hair raising. I was so happy to do it. I was so happy they asked me, and so happy I did it. On the other hand, I had to do on my children as well. So I was back and forth between the both coasts, New York, LA, LA, New York twice a week. And that turned out to be a big schedule. But Cameron Matheson had done it the season before. So Cameron showed me the ropes, told me which flights to take. And I wanted to do it. I wanted so much to do it. And so then you're faced with a challenge and you want to be up to the challenge. I will say that every time, and now, I mean, I admire the way they produce Dancing with the Stars because they change it up a little bit each season.
Yeah.
And that season, they were still announcing the name of your name, now dancing the cha-cha, this man with a British accent. And my heart would be pounding because going back and forth all the time like that, for me, I never felt that I really had choreography in my body as a dancer, we'll say, you know, the way I should. At the same time, I wouldn't have traded the experience for anything. I was thrilled to be there. So much fun in hair and makeup. You know, the first day, you know, to go into that big place where they store some of the costumes.
Yeah.
It's like a kid in a candy store, it's a little girl's dream. But there are seamstresses who make those costumes by hand every week. The designer designs them. The assistants come with racks of Swarovski crystals. And this room full of these very talented seamstresses are there sewing. And when I would get off the plane early Saturday morning, the costume designer would just do a little tweaking. He wouldn't have to do that, but he saw all the details, which was phenomenal. The first day I was there, I was doing the cha-cha. I was doing two dances that season. The first night we had to do two dances. And with the cha-cha, they said, well, everyone went to the tanning. Everyone went to get tan. And I said, no, I have olive skin. I'll be fine doing the cha-cha. And they said, well, we can put Swarovski crystals up into your hairline and all that. And I said, no, it's okay. Just give me a really smoky eye. I'll be fine. And I did the first night. Everybody else had been to tanning. I looked so washed out. I was ridiculous. So the next day I was like, where do I go for tanning? And what were you saying about Swarovski crystals into my hairline? I was like a monster. You couldn't stop. I just wanted those crystals on my eyes all the time.
The crystals are addicting, right?
Yes.
Would you ever do it again? Like if they did like another All-Star season and your phone rang, would you ever go back?
I would. I think about that sometimes. I think I would.
Do you watch it now that like Tyra's the host? And I mean, it's changed a little bit.
It has changed. It has changed. I will tell you, honestly, my husband and I are addicted to The Voice. And unfortunately, it's so sad that they're opposite each other. So we, you know, we flip back and forth, but I'm not as conversant in Dancing with the Stars right now that I used to be.
Are you loving Ariana Grande on The Voice?
I love her on The Voice. She is adorable. And I mean, apart from being an amazing talent, she's so charming and so funny. I like her.
I think she's like a great addition for the show.
I agree.
Like she's really, would you ever, you know, I know that he says that it's one of the greatest moments of his life and it's pretty much changed his career as Andy Cohn interning at CBS interviewing you. When you look at like Andy Cohn, are you just like, can you believe what he's become? Like, I mean, he's done it, right?
I can believe it. Because when he wrote me that letter, he was in college and he wrote me a letter asking for an interview. And there was something about that letter. I called my publicist and I told her about the letter. And I said, I would like to have lunch with him. I would like that. She said, you do? I said, yeah. One of those days where I have a longer lunch hour, let's try to make that happen. So Andy came down. We met. The lunch hours weren't that long, but I said, do you like Mexican? Can we go to Santa Fe? It was within walking distance of the studio. And we did. And we had such a good time. And at that time, he wanted to be a news anchor. He wanted to be an anchor. And I was sure he would be. I said, someday you're going to be the head of the London Bureau. And I'm going to see you when you come back. I'm going to be watching you, Andy Cohn. I know you're going to do this. And then as time went on, He was an executive at CBS, and I would be at CBS doing a talk show or something, and I would run into Andy from time to time, but didn't really see him again until after All My Children, actually. And I met him at his office in New York, and I knew that I remembered our first meeting and going to Santa Fe. And I had a photo from us then, but I'd never thought that he would remember, because now he had done, you know, all of the Housewives empire. And I was in his office, and he has a big bulletin board behind. And there was the same picture that I have. And he told me, he said, you know, you're the first and last chapter in my book. I had no idea. And it was so adorable. How anybody ever got, it was the 80s when Andy and I met, how anybody got both of us with our hair in the same photo is kind of amazing.
It's an iconic picture, and the hair is very 80s.
Yes.
It's very 80s. Well, you know, you do live in Long Island, and we have a Housewives of New York. So, I mean, if Andy Cohen called you and said, would you ever consider being a Real Housewife of New York, Susan?
Well, I would work for Andy anytime, any place. I never thought about being a housewife of anywhere, but I would give it a whirl. For Andy, of course, I would give it a whirl.
Are you do you watch any reality TV? Like, I know The Voice, the competitions. Do you get into any of the other stuff, like the Kardashians? Or like, are you ever just like, you know, look at this reality juggernaut? I mean, I know it's been around for a minute, but it's really hit new heights in the past 5 to 10 years.
It really has, I know. And I understand that people can get very intrigued. I did check out the Kardashians. I do something called Celebrity Autobiography from time to time.
Well, I know that because I have seen you in it from time to time.
You have?
The Triad Theater, baby.
Oh, wow. Yes.
You've read Kim Kardashian's.
I have played Kim. Yes. And so I wanted to check out, you know, how she is, because I was going to play her. And I could have become, my schedule has never been the same every day, every week. And so I have not been able to give into any kind of possible addiction. But I could see why people were hooked on Kardashians.
It's don't go down that road, because it's a long road and it's very addicting. Yes.
My mother used to watch The Bachelor. And I used to say, but Mom, you know, there's a lot of production going on, you know, it's not all what you see. She just was hooked. She loved that. I found it kind of adorable that she was watching The Bachelor.
She's like, please don't tell me about the production. Just let me. It's like willful blindness. Like, you know, but you don't want to know.
Exactly.
Do you love doing Celebrity Autobiography and other things you've done, like on Broadway? Like, do you love a live audience?
I love a live audience. And Celebrity Autobiography, we have done, you know, in Guildhall and East Hampton and, different places around the New York area and Broadway, actually. I always say last year, it wasn't. Everything is a year and a half or 2 years ago. And I love it. I get to play Ivana Trump, in her own words, and Elizabeth Taylor. At the same time, somebody's playing, you've seen it, say, you know, Eddie Fisher, somebody's doing Debbie Reynolds, and it's a wonderful Rashomon kind of thing. And it was the most, the most known around the world, a love affair ever. And so really fun to do that. And I loved playing Liz Taylor, loved playing Ivana Trump, loved playing Kim Kardashian. So yes, Celebrity Autobiography gives all of us a chance to really stretch. And also I love doing comedy. So really fun to do that. Actually made my Broadway debut in Annie Get Your Gun. And that was a thrill of a lifetime. Thrill of a lifetime. Worked with the original company.
What about, you know, Eileen Davidson and like Lisa Rinna just did Days of Our Lives beyond Salem. It was like a week-long streaming. It was like a reboot of some sorts. It was for a week. Mm-hmm. And it was Days of Our Lives, and it was a lot of the original cast. Do you think, and it did really well in the streaming ratings, however that works, like, do you think, is All My Children prime for a week long beyond Pine Valley?
Well, you know, I didn't know that about Days of Our Lives, and they are wonderful. Eileen Davidson and Lisa Rinna. There has been no talk of that as far as I know. I'm somebody who doesn't like to talk about something until I'm on the set actually doing it, but it was leaked that there is a show in the works called Pine Valley that Kelly Ripa and Mark Consuelos will be producing. And that sounds really interesting because it's very, very cleverly done. And it takes into account the characters who the audience loves. And it puts some new characters in there that keeps it very fresh. So I'm excited to see if that really goes.
And if it goes, you'll be a part of this. Erica Kane will be a part of it.
They tell me, yes. And I told them, yes, I'm interested.
Well, that's like the best news I've heard all month.
Thank you.
What advice would you give yourself if you look back now to 1970, your first day on All My Children, knowing what you know now?
Mm-hmm. Well, it's easy for me to talk now, you know, looking back. I would say relax. On the other hand, probably all that care that went in to the work is a good thing. But I was very shy growing up. And so I would probably say to my younger self, you know, don't be so shy, you know.
That's good advice. How much of Erica Kane is in Susan Lucci? Or vice versa?
Yeah, it is vice versa. It works both ways. Yeah, it just depends on the day, you know. I will say that if there's going to be a lot of Erica Kane in me one day, I will give my family members fair warning. You know, I'll say, this is not a good time, a good day. But I think there's Erica Kane in everybody, you know. She's somebody who wants what she wants when she wants it. That's yesterday. And I think at our core, we all feel like that, but we just go to school, we get civilized, we're told you can't be like that. So we pull in our horns and we try to be nice. But I think Erica was everybody's opportunity to let their inside voice out.
I agree. And I think that's why she's so beloved and people just loved her and hated her and loved to hate her. It's like, I think it just, we all got to live through Erica Kane.
Yes. I mean, she did some things I don't know about, you know, rolling up the body in the Persian rug and burying him in the garden. That might've been gone a little bridge too far, but everything else.
We may not all do that every day, right?
Right.
As we wrap up, if they were going to make a movie on your life, like if you look at, you know, like an Ariana Grande or like some of these, like, you know, younger actresses, they wanted to cast you with, like, you know, like in your beginning of your career, when you started, like, is there any actress that comes to the top of your mind where you're like, she could play Susan Lucci?
Well, you know, when I watch Ariana Grande on The Voice, it does occur to me, I think she would be very good. The other one who has struck me, who would be good to play me, would be Camila Cabello.
Camila Cabello, yeah.
Both of them would have a lot of juice, I think.
They could play it all.
Uh-huh.
Is there anything that you want to leave us with that first of all, you know, I really, really, really thank you very much for taking your time and doing this. I speak to a lot of people, but, you know, every now and then it's personal for me. So I just want to say, like, even if you gave me 5 minutes of your time, I would be saying this, but I really appreciate your time.
Oh, David, thank you so much. And you asked me wonderful questions and allowed me to tell my story. And thank you so very much. And also thank you for telling me that it's personal for you. I'm so glad to know that you were watching. Thank you very much.
I was watching it all these years. And you've just, thank you so much for everything you do. And just thank you. And I really enjoyed speaking to you. Everyone needs to follow you online. I'll keep my fingers crossed for this Kelly Ripa, Mark Consuelos, Erica Kane, and hopefully we'll be speaking soon. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, David.
Take care.
You too. Take good care.
Bye.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to yet another episode of Behind the Velvet Rope. Because without you listeners, I would just be a crazy person with voices in my head. And if you like what you hear,
subscribe on Apple Podcasts under Behind the Velvet Rope. And when you're done subscribing, feel free to leave a 5-star write-up review, because the write-up reviews actually count. We read each and every one of them. We post the best ones, and the reviews really help our shows keep going. And we really appreciate everything you guys say, especially the positive ones. And if you want to find us online, we're at Behind Velvet Rope on Instagram. We are at David Yontef on Instagram. We're Behind the Velvet Rope on Apple Podcasts. Or head on over to Patreon, because you know what? There are just some things we can't talk about here. So for our bonus episodes, go to Patreon and type in Behind the Velvet Rope. And if you still aren't sick of me and you want more David, go to Cameo and book me on Cameo. And you can ask me anything there. I'll answer whatever you want. And I have a bargain basement price of $10. Thank you guys. See you soon.